This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton has served Southwest Michigan since he was first elected to Congress in 1986. He's now seeking another two-year term in the House. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here. Thanks.
We're also joined by Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Gordon.
Before we get to questions, let me just have you briefly, if you would, tell us what you would do with another 2 years in the House.
Well, we have a lot on our agenda. I don't know if I can be brief or not, but very quickly, I would look to continue to chair the Energy and Commerce Committee. We have jurisdiction over energy, environment, health care, commerce, manufacturing, trade, telecommunications, and, of course, oversight. And we've got a lot of things that we're working on now that certainly carry into next year. On the telecommunications front, we're looking to update the Communications Act from 18 years ago. A lot of changes, internet, wireless, a whole number of different things. A major bipartisan proposal. We've been doing a number of different things, white papers, roundtables, a lot of different meetings so far. So that'll be early on in the agenda next year. Also, one of the things that we unveiled this last month, of course, is our 21st Century Cures, a way that we can faster develop and promote safe drugs and devices, working with our disease groups, Alzheimer's, diabetes, cancer, et cetera, along with our university researchers, pharma, device manufacturers, as well as obviously the FDA, as well as the National Institutes of Health, to try and help us figure out a way to solve these diseases. And we're looking for a number of different meetings and sessions and subcommittee hearings as well. Finish the year and early next year, I think we'll be ready to move again bipartisan legislation. We've reached out to the Republicans and Democrats, and we have that legislation, I think, can be ready to go early next year. But it's, our focus is jobs and the economy, and we'll continue to do that. And should I be reelected? Most pundits do think that the Republicans will pick up seats in both the House and the Senate, be in a very good position to look out for our district on things that we certainly all care about. And I'm in a pretty good position chairing the oldest committee with arguably the most jurisdiction in the House.
Yvonne, first question for Congressman Fred Upton.
Congressman Upton.
Now, you can call me Fred, Yvonne. Go back. All right. Same with you, Gordon. All right. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
So today, the EPA released a proposed regulation that would reduce carbon emissions at coal-fired plants by 30% by 2030. Would you support such a change?
Well, we're anxious to see what the details are. I had a brief conference call about an hour ago with some of my staff. It's a 640-page rule that will not become final until next year. Lots of comments. We've asked EPA to come testify on their proposal, and that's going to take place later on this month. I want to say 2 or 3 weeks from now, EPA has agreed to come up, though I don't think that it will be Gina McCarthy, the administrator. But we're all concerned about the cost. We got new job figures or economic analysis on GDP growth for the first quarter of this year, and of course they went down. That's not a good sign. Most experts, even the EPA, I want to says that this is going to cost consumers in the billions of dollars, a lot of different estimates, but we'll try to figure out where that is. But we're anxious to see what the proposal is. I think they confess up front that it, in fact, is not going to impact temperatures at all. So, but, we'll wait to see what it looks like. But I've obviously not had a chance to really examine any of the details at this point.
The Wall Street Journal in their story says that the framework seeks to strike a balance between what environmentalists want, which is an ambitious overall target, and what the utility industry wants, flexibility, a long compliance timeline, and an earlier base year calculation to meet the goal. Carbon emissions have dropped since 2005, so it makes the reduction smaller starting from 2005 than if they were to, say, start from this year. Does that sound like, in those very broad terms, sound like something reasonable to you?
Well, we have had declining emissions the last couple of years. One of the things the president said early on was he was looking forward to actually seeing electricity costs skyrocket. This could do that. But I think we have to take the time to analyze the details here. Obviously, we are going to be looking at the base year. I think that they took what, 2005?
2005 is the base year.
2005, which was a higher emission target than we have now because, we've had declining numbers. So without really examining the details, knowing what the costs are, what the increased costs to individuals as well as businesses, what is the rest of the world likely to do? I know that there's a meeting next year, a worldwide meeting like we've had before. I think that it's that we really have to take the time to really look at the details of what this is that they're proposing. On the surface, yes, energy costs will go up, perhaps dramatically. For all Americans, is that the right balance that we want? Is that the right attitude that the Congress is going to take? Until we get the facts, I can't predict that for you.
The EPA Administrator McCarthy issued a statement today noting that she had recently made a trip to the Cleveland Clinic and met Parker Fry, who is 10 years old. He has struggled with severe asthma all his life. His mom said despite his challenges, Parker's a tough, active kid and a stellar hockey player. But sometimes she says the air is too dangerous for him to play outside. In the United States of America, no parent should ever have that worry. Do you agree?
Well, we've done a lot on emissions already. We've had declining emissions the last number of years. I did not hear or listen to the. It's been a crazy morning for me this morning. I didn't listen to her statement or to the press conference earlier today. But again, we look forward to having them come testify before the committee.
All right, let me just note we are speaking on Monday, June 2nd, the day that these rules have been released, just in case someone catches up with this later on. Yvonne?
On Friday, the Veterans Affairs Secretary, Shinseski, resigned. And I know you said that it was needed accountability in order to fix a broken VA system. Obviously, his resignation alone is not going to solve these problems. What do you think some important next steps are?
Here's what's troubling. Our office, we've got two offices here in Michigan. I got a little report even earlier today. Our veterans, whether they're just coming back now from Afghanistan or they've been, they've served in Vietnam, Korea, et cetera, there's a promise that's there on health care. And particularly the last number of months, so there have been lengthy delays for many of our veterans to even get appointments at a variety of facilities. This morning I learned about a man who needs a whole knee. I mean, it is gone. And I think that I was told that he checked in with the VA and they told him to come in about 6 weeks from now. We're helping him. I think he's going to get in this week. We're hearing these stories quite a bit. And what was troubling was that the VA, particularly right at the top, was indicating that they weren't aware of some of those stories. We had a cover-up that led to perhaps, dozens dying, maybe as many as 40, maybe even more, particularly out in Arizona, where information was hid. And, that's pretty bad. And for the VA not to recognize this, and we've given them the money, the budget is requested by the president. We've passed that. It's had overwhelming support, bipartisan support, to make sure that the dollars are there. And I think it now begs the question and goes back to something I've been saying for some time. And I heard again last week there was a major veterans event over in Mattawan a couple weeks ago that Margaret O'Brien and Tiny Shootmaker and Eric Nesbitt traditionally hold. It's a senior/veteran event. And I want to say it was there that somebody came up and they were aware of someone that was trying to travel to a VA clinic. And I want to say it was Ann Arbor, but from Traverse City. And they traveled all across the state and they found out that the appointment was canceled and had to travel all the way back. What is wrong with telling veterans wherever they are that you have a choice of where you want to get your treatment? So maybe you don't live where a VA hospital or a provider or a clinic is. If you live in Kalamazoo, and I know Battle Creek's pretty close, but if you live here, why not be able to go to Bronson or Borges or Battle Creek or Ann Arbor. Or if you live in the UP, and I don't know whether – I would imagine there may be a couple of outpatient VA clinics there. I imagine, but I don't know. But let people go see the provider of their choice, perhaps in the community where they live now versus traveling perhaps as many as hundreds of miles, a round trip back and forth. Let's give our vets a voucher so that they can get quality care where they live. And I think you may see an effort now, particularly with the major difficulties that we've seen that have been exposed over the last month or two in hearings, of what I think would be bipartisan legislation that could move forward to give those vets a choice of where they actually want to get their service. We also know that there's a shortage of doctors at a number of these facilities as well. So, again, we need to take care of our vets. We need to keep our promises. And it's more than just General Shinseki, who clearly he was the top guy. I said heads needed to roll. He was, I would like to think that he was aware of it for a long time and really not a lot happened on his watch. And what we need now is someone that can come in with the command authority to really make the changes so that our veterans get the decent care that certainly that they deserve.
I'm going to use this opportunity to pivot into another issue because there were a number of people who noted an irony here, which is that the VA has a lot of people demanding their service now because we've had two wars ongoing for over a decade. And it was Eric Shinseki, then as a general, who warned that we needed much more resources and many more troops than the Bush administration planned on to go into Iraq. And he was really not listened to. His advice was not heeded. So I want to use this opportunity to ask you, if we are in a situation, again, where this president or perhaps a future president, if you're still in the House, is asking for the authorization to use force, are there some lessons from that pre-Iraq war period and what General Shinseki said at the time that should be applied if Congress is being asked to send troops overseas again?
Well, you'll remember, and so this is dating back, back back in the early 90s with the first Iraq war, that there were a number of very classified briefings. I remember well President Bush, this is Bush 41, not 43, Bush 41, not really wanting to go to the Congress to seek the authorization. I was among those that in some small meetings with him convinced him that that was what he should do. He should come to the Congress and seek our support. And he did. He chose that. He made that decision. And there were a whole number of classified briefings about allegedly what we knew, what we didn't. And there was a bipartisan proposal. Hillary Clinton voted to authorize troops to go into Iraq, and it prevailed.
This is 2002 going into Iraq under George W. Bush, who was then president. Because Hillary Clinton would not have been in the Senate when George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah. No. Well, it was. Anyway, Bush 43. Well, maybe you're right. Maybe it was. Yeah. In 02, when we came back. But the decision was made. Hillary Clinton voted yes, as did I, based on the evidence that we saw. As it turned out, some of that evidence was wrong.
Going back, the question is,
Congress needs to be involved in these decisions when you authorize war. That's one of the reasons why you'll remember this last year. Again, it was President Obama who wanted to, at least press reports talked about him using force to go into Syria. Again, I think that it was important that he come to the Congress. At the end of the day, they realized that they did not have the votes, that they had not made the case before the Congress in a bipartisan way, and he stepped down, chose not to do that.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton, and also here is Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Yvonne?
Last week, your likely Democratic opponents in November accused you of no longer being a moderate. How do you respond to that?
Well, you get a thick skin when you run for office. That's one change that I've had. But I've had a primary the last couple of Republican primary the last couple of times. I saw them over this weekend, and they always charge me with being too far to the left, and I've always had a general opponent, and they always charge me with being too far to the right. It's sort of like the Goldilocks with the hot cereal, I guess you could say, too hot or too cold, too right or too left. I would So, of course, you know, when you run a campaign, of course, it's sort of the MO for the opposition. They're going to do that, and he's operating under the same playbook. How would I respond to that? Well, a couple things. And both of you particularly have watched my record, watched me in interviews and everything for a long time. I was one of a minority in the House that voted to end the fiscal cliff crisis. I would say that maybe the easy vote was no, but the right vote for me, I thought, was yes, and I voted that way. I was one of, again, a minority of Republicans that voted to end the shutdown last year, one of 86. I was one that supported the two-year bipartisan budget plan, the Ryan Murray plan in December. I voted for the Farm Bill when it failed last year, and I voted for the Farm Bill when it passed. And my Republican opponent criticizes me for voting for the Farm Bill period, would have tripled milk prices, would have done a whole number of bad things. I mean, Debbie Stabenow did a good job in chairing that bill through the conference committee, and we were able to get disaster relief now for our fruit folks, particularly on cherries. It's a new program, and that was embodied in this new bill. You know, I look at what I'm doing on 21st Century Cures. I look at a whole host of votes that I've cast, and I've been targeted, frankly, by the hard right in each of the last two elections because they have thought that I'm too far to the left. And so I guess it's the normal MO for the Democrat then to say something else. But in fact, my votes. I think reflect the majority of where our district is, which is why I've done pretty well in the elections all these different cycles.
Let me try to take you out of this equation as much as we can, because you're hardly the only Republican congressman who's been targeted by more conservative elements within the party. And what many political commentators have said is that whether or not the Tea Party, as they are, if you want to call it that part of the party, wins these elections in primaries, it may not matter a whole lot because they're moving the party to the right. Do you see the Republican Party as more conservative than it was, say, when you started in Congress in the mid-80s?
Well, the big difference between now and the mid-80s is that when I was first elected, I got to say, and I remember I'd worked for President Reagan before I ran for office, I never thought ever that the Republicans would be in the majority. Because, frankly, for almost my entire lifetime, we were in the minority. In fact, we were well under, I think, the number of years we didn't even have 150 votes in the House out of 435. I think there were a couple of years we were in the 140s. And now, you know, we have a slim majority. Speaker Pelosi had an 86-vote margin. Speaker Boehner now, it's about a 30-vote margin or so. We have 233 Republicans. 218 is the magic mark in terms of being in the majority or not. And, you know, for me, my focus has always been getting things done. Virtually almost every bill that we've moved through our committee has had Democratic support. And we've had, you know, a lot of bills. We've actually been able to pass on a voice vote on a host of things, working with Republicans and Democrats to get it done. And, you know, has the Republican Party itself moved to the right? Well, you know, we're in charge, whereas in the past we never were. But, you know, now you have to govern. And I've been part of that governing majority. And the bills that I cited a few minutes ago, the Farm Bill, a budget for the first time. Remember, the Senate didn't do a budget, I want to say, for 4 or 5 years, and we actually got one done. It was a two-year budget. We're now working on the appropriation bills, and we've got three of them done now in the House. And again, a number of bipartisan amendments that have been part of that process and ending results. And, you know, my MO has always been to try and get things done and work with both sides. I've been able to do that.
More than a few times sitting in the very chair you're in now, you have used the phrase governing Republican to refer to yourself and some other members of Congress.
Thanks for reminding me. That's what I am.
But that indicates that there's a different type of Republican.
Well, let's face it. We have a number of Republicans, not certainly a majority, but probably, I think, a few dozen. It is easy to vote no. You can always find something wrong probably in every bill out there. And we have a number of folks on our side who do vote no on virtually every issue, whether it's veterans, whether it's prosthetic research, I mean, finding the artificial limbs for our soldiers coming back from Afghanistan. You know, you name an issue. I mean, I don't know that we could get apple pie, you know, as being an American dessert being passed with some of the folks that are there. It just comes as part of the territory. There are no votes on just about everything. And to be able to, you know, hey, we've to govern, it means you've got to pass appropriation bills. We've got to do a lot of things that have to happen. And when you have a small majority, and that's what's, you know, our leadership is right now, very small. You lose only 15 people and a vote will go down if you're not reached out, particularly to the other side. Bad things happen. As we look at a couple of issues coming up, immigration reform is a huge issue. Maybe it's going to be one on your questions as well. We didn't chat in advance. But again, the easy vote, I guess, for folks is to vote no. But the right vote is we got to figure this out. It is a broken system for a lot of people, a lot of employers, and to sit on our hands and do nothing is not the right approach that we ought to take. And I'm fighting to get immigration reform on the House floor, perhaps as early as next month, with lots of different people. And to get it done, it's got to be bipartisan. But I guess you could say the easy vote for some of my colleagues will be no, and they're going to be a no, and it makes it tough. It does make it tough to govern. So we have a number of folks, a number of my colleagues, and yeah, they'd like to vote no, but it's with tough choices, you got to make a decision. And the best thing is to try and work with folks to try and get it done and get it fixed.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton, and Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette is also here. Yvonne?
Last week, we had a 13-year-old who was killed in the Edison neighborhood.
Breaks all of our hearts.
Yeah. And I wanted to take this time to ask you if you think any steps need to be taken with regard to gun control.
Well, a couple of things. We actually had a vote last week. I voted yes to commit, I want to say it was about $18 million more dollars. It was offset, so it didn't add to the deficit. To improve the national background check for the purchase of firearms. This has been in place for a while. I supported the Brady Bill when it was first passed back in the 90s. Michigan has had a background check for a long time. I've gone to just see how it works myself. I've gone to my sheriff department, showed them, given my Social Security number, my driver's license, and yes, I have a clean record. You would have discovered otherwise a long time ago if it wasn't. But improvements can be made. And again, that vote passed on a bipartisan vote. There's still significant opposition to it. We're beginning to look at the idea, and you know, this is to the California shooting the week before. Obviously, it was very tragic here with this young boy that was killed, and the services, I think, are this week for him. You know, wait to see how the trial unfolds and everything else. But, you know, it's the background check is a good tool that I think has to be used before the purchase of firearms. One of the things that we're looking at, and we've got to figure out the right way to do this, is the addition of mental health records as part of that background check. Now, in a lot of cases, the states have they're first, not the federal government. I know that I heard the news earlier this week that California is, because of this California shooting, is looking at adding that to their system. I want to say that there's some of that in Michigan, but there's I think you're going to see another look at that perhaps on the federal side of things as it relates to the NCIC background check that we have now. But it's you know, it's, you know, all of these cases are just, you know, as a dad, you know, can't imagine something like that happening to your child.
The U.S. House approved a measure last week which blocks the federal government from interfering with states that permit the use of medical marijuana. Is this a good idea?
You know, I voted for that amendment. I don't know if you know that or did
I
you
do.
Know that?
Yeah.
And, you know, the Michigan voters made a decision. And it was pretty overwhelming. I want to say it was over 60% a few years ago. I want to say 4 or 5. And I was asked then at the time what I would do, and I said, you know, if Michigan voters make that decision, I'm going to comply with the Michigan voters, and that's what we did. We actually had another vote that failed a few weeks ago as it relates to VA care. So to use the example in Michigan where it is medical marijuana is permitted, why not allow the VA facility in Michigan, not a state that didn't have that, but at least in Michigan, to be able to prescribe or help. Actually, this was to offer information. I don't think it was actually to prescribe, but to actually offer information was the way that the amendment was written. And as I recall, that amendment failed. I voted for it, but it failed. But again, Michigan voters have made that decision. It's managed by the states, and I'm comfortable with the vote that I cast.
Are you in favor of any other further federal action to decriminalize, not necessarily legalize, but decriminalize marijuana?
Well, again, this is more of a state issue than it is federal. So the states, and we've seen obviously Colorado do that. We've seen, I want to say, Washington State, I think, has agreed to it as well. It may be on ballot proposals in a number of states come this fall. I'm hearing that it may be on Michigan's ballot in 2016. You know, I'm comfortable with letting the states make that decision, not the federal government.
Yvonne?
Can I ask about another social issue that's been very prominent in the news, which is the possibility of legalizing same-sex marriage? Do you think that's something the federal government should weigh in on?
Well, again, I look at what our state did, and this was, again, a number of years ago. I know our district and our state both rejected same-sex marriages. I do think that the polls would show that may not be the same vote today as it was 6 or 8 years ago when we had it on our state ballot. And I'm sensing again that we may see this on our state ballot. Again, I'm not quite sure how it works because I think it was put into our state constitution.
It was, right. Mm-hmm. It have to be repealed.
Does it have to then have to have a ballot proposal to repeal it? So,
yes.
My sense is that they're again, you may see this come in 2016 or so. I think 19 states now have either signed off or a court has ruled what their case is. And as I recall, too, the Michigan initiative, the Michigan constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriages is under review by federal court.
Correct.
So I think we're all, you know, I think the court will decide that if they don't overturn it, I would expect that maybe you'll see it on the ballot again. But I've cast my vote based on what our voters did when we had that on the ballot proposal a number of years ago, as the same with what happened with marijuana in the last couple of weeks.
Just a little bit of time left. We have spent a number of these interviews over the years talking about the Affordable Care Act. You have recently said that repeal is now pretty much off the table for the foreseeable future. So could you just give us a couple of quick examples of things that you would want to do to make changes in it, to work within the framework that you think would improve the law or at least improve the care of people under it?
Well, I'll tell you, and I remember I opposed this as it was coming, probably the biggest most troublesome part of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as even the president refers to it, is the idea that, and again, it was promoted just in recent weeks, Ezekiel Emanuel, who was the president's health care advisor, I think he's the brother of Rahm Emanuel, now mayor of Chicago, said something along the lines of the New York Times that by 2020, they were hoping that private or business health insurance, business employer-based health insurance would be done, would be gone. And I think he said something like, we expect by 2020, 90% of employers that provide health insurance today are not going to be doing that. And I think that is it. I think that is what they tried to seek, and I think that they're going to achieve their goal if it stays in place. And I think it's enormously wrong to see that leave. We have seen we discovered just in recent weeks that just seven states spent $1 billion on trying to get their website and their exchanges up and running. I don't think anyone anticipated that the cost would be that high. There's a story earlier this week in the Chicago Tribune saying that the employer mandate ought to be repealed. They have an editorial in today's paper, actually. The White House itself, I think, delayed that employer mandate for a year or two. But, you know, we're going to see double-digit increases in a lot of premiums for 2015 is the prediction for next year. They're just enormous problems, not only we had with the website, but now with the program itself as it's trying to work. And it was never really meant for prime time. They weren't ready for it.
What's a quick fix or two? Something that makes it better.
I mean, so repeal would be easy, but that you're right. I mean, with President Obama's there, he's going to veto that. We don't have the votes in the Senate to get it done. So we're looking at a number of options that people might have. I had a bill last year that allowed folks that had individual policies to be able to keep them. I think maybe we ought to see legislation later this year that it says that if an employer has health care plan for their employees that was in effect, maybe they ought to be able to keep them too so that they don't lose them. So that's a quick little fix that we could do to provide some relief to folks that otherwise are being burdened with higher costs, higher deductibles, higher premiums, and somewhat of a lack of access to providers across the nation too.
Congressman Fred Upton, as always, thank you for your time. Congressman Fred Upton has been serving Michigan's 6th District, or parts of Southwest Michigan anyway, since he was first elected in 1986, now seeking another 2-year term. And we also want to thank Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.